Hello, this is Michelle Machante reporting for The Beacon. I'm here with the Director of Film Studies at FIU, Andrew Strykarski.
Hi, thank you, Professor, for doing this interview with me.
You're welcome.
Just to start off, to you, what does a superhero mean?
I would say a superhero is someone who possesses some kind of extraordinary power or talent. Who tends to, but doesn't have to, have a secret identity that they use in the real world that's different from their superhero identity, and who engages in various kinds of what they at least would perceive to be noble acts in order to better, you know, the world in some way, shape, or form.
So, normally, superheroes are considered like a niche genre that only a selected few are interested in, but lately, we've seen not just Superman and Batman coming onto the scene, but characters like Arrow and Deadpool.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think has made it more accessible to these superheroes, to the main public?
I mean, that's actually a really interesting question. It's something I thought about and I don't know if I have a good answer for it. I mean, there are a few things. One is I think that as American culture has become more accepting of various kinds of difference, one kind of difference that has become more accepted is just like geeky difference, you know? And so, you know, where before there were kinds of things that, you know, you would sort of be ashamed of like, you know, liking the Lord of the Rings and playing Dungeons and Dragons, and you know, there being all kinds of geek shaming surrounding those kinds of things. That's like the world I grew up in. Today, it's like you get to celebrate your geekiness, you know. And so one of the things is just like there's traditionally been this association of superheroes with like children, comics, and then geeks and stuff like that. And I think that as culture has sort of opened up to you know, greater acceptance of those things, it's also opened up to saying, hey, you know what, be honest, you like, you know, watching men in tights fly around and kick ass, you know. And so that's one of the elements, I think, that is at play. Another element that's at play, and I'm not sure where this comes from, is just the general way in which fantasy has become a predominant sort of area of fictional experience for us. And so I think that we have moved away from a sharp focus on realism and realistic narratives. I mean, although they still exist and they're still very prominent, you know, but I think that there is a lot more room for expressions in various genres of fantasy, you know, and so I think that, and you know, fantasy and the marvelous are things that are much more alive in culture today than they may have been at different points in the past.
Okay.
So, you know, those are weak explanations, you know, but they're something.
Yeah. It actually links into my next question.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of production, you know, with the ways that the Marvel movies are being done, you know, they're getting a lot of praise
mm-hmm.
in the technical production and the acting and
mm-hmm.
everything and just in the storyline.
Mm-hmm.
What are some key differences you've noticed in the movies of today of superheroes based on the ones from the past that tend to get mixed and mediocre reviews?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the big differences is that I think people are just taking these movies a lot more seriously. You know, and you know, I mean, obviously Christopher Nolan was a hugely important figure in this idea that, you know, you can make a superhero film and have it be a film that people couldn't actually take with a degree of seriousness. You know, I mean, I think that, you know, okay. And I compare that to Westerns, you know. I mean, there was a long time when Westerns were just seen as sort of B-movie fare and kids' entertainment, and, you know, no one would take a Western seriously as a film. And then John Ford's Stagecoach came along, and people said, oh, you can actually take this genre seriously as a place where serious movies can be made, right? I think that similar thing has happened with Dark Knight trilogy with Christopher Nolan. I think that you know, said to people, oh, this is a this is a genre that you can actually take seriously. I think seriously in terms of thematic presentation, but I think that seriousness has also brought with it a sense of, well, you know, let's be good craftsmen, you know, in creating these films, as opposed to just you know, sort of ridiculously slapping a bunch of stuff together. You know, I mean, Tim Burton would probably hate, you know, a characterization of any of his movies as in the way that I just did, but still, there's a sense in which a Tim Burton superhero movie, you know, like Tim Burton's Batman, was just like, I mean, it lacked a kind of coherence and a kind of idea that this was more than just a way to display some sets that were obvious sets, you know. I think that there's a greater degree of psychological complexity in characters now. I think there is oftentimes a greater degree of, you know, just focus on screenwriting and how to, you know, you think about the Iron Man movies, for example, and how do you introduce witty banter into a movie, you know, that's drawn, I mean, all the way from you know, screwball comedy, you know, really. I mean, the sort of effective, you know, use of dialogue. And I think that, you know, both on the level of thematics and on just the level of craft, that you know, for me, Christopher Nolan's movies were big and sort of shifting a way of imagining what a superhero movie could be.
Okay. All right, so now I just want to get into the history film tends to have with the social and political atmosphere. Could you just explain how it coincides with what's happening? Like films in general.
You will, it would be a magical person who could you know, that I wish I had that superpower.
there's like,
very, very complicated ways that I think that film interacts with society. I mean, there are a couple of different things it can do, right? One, it can help people to escape from social reality. And I think that there are ways that movies do that and have done that historically. I mean, you look at movies that were made, for example, before after the beginning of World War II in Europe and before the entry of the U.S. into World War II. And a lot of American movies, you know, try their best to just ignore everything that's happening in the rest of the world and instead present a kind of isolated, happy view of American society at that point in time, you know. And then after America enters World War II, then Hollywood, you know, becomes part of war production, basically, and they, you know, start cranking out all kinds of patriotic stuff, right? So I think that, you know, movies can be an escape from reality. And I mean, I think some Depression era movies, you know, do that same sort of thing where it's like it allows people to get away from, you know, daily life rather than commenting directly on daily life, which I think is the other thing that movies can do, right, is they can recognize the kind of world that people inhabit, recognize a mood in a society, and help to channel the particular mood that there is there in a society, right? So that's a sort of, and then, you know, then you've got direct commentary also, you know, where movies, you know, very clearly are addressing very specific events that have happening and that are important, right? Let's just say a primary example of that would be Robert Altman's MASH, you know, and so it tells the story of, you know, set in the Korean War, but clearly it's an allegory for America's current involvement in the Vietnam War. And it's commenting on, you know, the nature of that involvement from Altman's and from, you know, the general, you know, critical point of view that you find with many people. So, you know, I would say there are, you know, movies can do all of those things. They can escape, they can channel a general mood, and they can also directly comment on.
Okay, so With the major superheroes like Superman and Captain America, they all started coming about right after the Great Depression, before World War II.
Mm-hmm.
And then they kind of like died and, you know, they became the niche, but now they've become prominent again. Mm-hmm. What in today's current society,
mm-hmm.
not just in America, but in the world, if you want to expand, do you think has given rise to the superhero movement again?
I think that's really interesting, you know. I mean, I think part of it is a desire among a lot of Americans to think of themselves as good guys and of fighting for the right. You know, I mean, I think that you have seen, you know, since the Vietnam War, there has been a lot more willingness within American society for Americans to criticize American society. You know, I mean, I think that was, you know, if you say taboo, but, well, yeah, I mean, it was taboo. And actually, the Hollywood Production Code, you know, in ways directly forbade, you know, the sorts of criticisms. And I think American society, after World War II, gradually and then explosively in the 1960s, became much more capable of criticizing America. And I think that that's something that has continued in a lot of ways up to the present day. And yet I think there's a kind of backlash against that also, where there are a lot of Americans who want to be able to imagine themselves as the good guys. And it seems to me that you know, the reemergence of figures like Superman, and I would say especially Captain America, is an attempt to recapture that feeling from, you know, the World War II, where America was, you know, I mean, Americans, you know, for the most part had this feeling that, you know, we were the good guys and we were fighting for right and you know, fighting, you know, against, you know, very threatening forces, you know. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I think that's the other thing that's interesting here is the idea of, you know, there aren't, The external threats that the U.S. faces have really changed over time. And I think there was a period of time when the Soviet Union crumbled and where there just was, when there was just this feeling that there was no one in the rest of the world who was a competitor, you know, with or a threat to the United States in terms of, you know, military power or you know, any of that. And so perhaps that feeling of just sort of superiority is something that people have begun to lose faith in again, you know?
Right. Like, yeah. Maybe, you know, with the threats that we have of terrorist groups, you know, like ISIS,
mm-hmm.
and we have China building that military base,
mm-hmm.
the neutral waters. Do you think that might all be like how the Nazis were in World War II for us?
I think if you ask me historically, are there similarities? I would say very thin similarities,
right.
You know. But if you're talking about in a kind of cultural imagination, yeah, I could see that, you know, and I could definitely see the idea that, let's see how to put this, Americans today feel a threat that they didn't feel in the very recent past.
Right.
And I think there's a generation of people who have grown up without a sense of external threat and now are experiencing that sense of external threat perhaps for the first time.
Right.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you ask me in terms of longer history of the U.S., I don't think that today there is an external threat that is, you know, at any sort of level comparable to what we're facing, you know, during the
right.
days of mutually assured destruction between the U.S. and the Soviet Union.
Right, but
you
it's
know.
Still a type of threat for us today.
Right.
So it's the most dangerous thing
right.
to our
and
American values.
Right,
right.
And I would say, you know, you know, with that, I think it's probably significant that you're talking about a generation that's grown up without a feel. You know, it's like there was no more Russia.
Right.
You know, there was no Nazi Germany. There was no, like, sense of, you know, here are these people who threaten our existence. They've grown up without that sense at all. And now, perhaps, are feeling, you know, a sense of it. So even though for me, you know, when I look at, you know, international terrorism, you know, I say, you know, it's something to take seriously and to think about how to address. I don't see it as sort of like an existential threat in the way that I grew up with a sense of, you know, Russia could launch its nuclear arsenal and wipe out the world,
right.
You know, kind of thing.
Right. Okay. So, movies and TV shows have aided the mainstream, obviously, from the superheroes, even the ones that we don't know, like Arrow, The Flash, they've
mm-hmm.
made them more prominent.
Mm-hmm.
But what do you think it is about superheroes that allows the audience to connect with them, not just in the comic book format, but when they go into the films and the television, and they transcend
mm-hmm.
into, like, these actual people?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I think that to me, it's probably identification, you know. I mean, to me, it's probably a sense of we imagine ourselves you know, in our dirty little secret, imagine ourselves as having superpowers, right? But B, I think, you know, along with that, imagine ourselves as having the power to do good and having to face the kinds of dilemmas with that power that superheroes face. And I think it's very compelling for a viewer because I think that modern superhero movies and TV shows are complex, you know. And I think they present psychological complexity, and I think they present moments of moral complexity. And I think that one of the things that we associate with is specifically that level of complexity and placing ourselves in situations where, you know, we would have to make heroic decisions and heroic sacrifices. You know, I mean, I think that, you know, it's like, it's different from the everyday decisions and sacrifices that we make because we all do that. But I think that it places us in a position where we can imagine it on a much larger scale. I think that's part of what makes it really compelling.
Okay. That actually links into my last question
mm-hmm.
for you. For example, in the Supergirl finale
mm-hmm.
show, she has to decide either does she do a bomb to destroy the villain, but that'll kill at least 7% of the population of humans,
mm-hmm.
or does she try to connect to the humans to get them out of the brainwashing? And she does this really big speech about hope, and it has this powerful message in it.
Mm-hmm.
But then we are also seeing, you know, like Batman versus Superman, we see Batman killing, which is something that superheroes in the past wouldn't do.
Right.
So they're changing, but there's still a moral ethical tone or message in these superheroes.
Yeah.
How, in filming a TV or a film, how can the director get those messages across in a way that doesn't push it so much the audience lose interest because they're like, you're preaching?
Mm-hmm.
How do you think they're making it effective without crossing that barrier? What for you, like, what steps would they have to do?
I mean, I think, you know, when it's effective, it's presented as in a way that's not all that different from it is in a non-superhero movie, you know. I mean, not preaching is you know, huge, right? And so, you know, you're not going to have the big speech where, you know, everything is sort of like laid out. And so for me, you know, I mean, I think about the movie Independence Day and that famous speech from the first Independence Day movie that's even being used for the trailer for the second one, right? You know, and it's like, that's like, it gets a little cheesy, right? But when you see characters who are in situations and having to make decisions in those situations, when you see the when you make judgments about a character against the character because of what they are doing, you know, or because of a decision that they make. In those sorts of ways, I mean, I think that that is the way that, you know, I find compelling in presenting some kind of moral or ethical idea. You know, I mean, I think of movies, I mean, going past superhero movies now, you know, that really present, you know, ethical complications in a way that I find compelling. You know, it's when a character is attempting to achieve something that in itself is noble or good or something along those lines, but then they're having to, but then the decisions they make along the way drive them into behaving in unethical ways, then you've got something that you really, I feel you can really sink your teeth into, or that really is compelling to me as a viewer.
So it's to make the superhero be kind of more human, but in a non-human situation.
Right, right, okay. Exactly.
Okay, yeah. All right. Thank you so much for the interview, Professor.
You're welcome.